Hi, everybody. Geraldo here. Welcome to Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. If this is your first time listening, thank you very much for tuning us in. Every week or so, I'll give you my thoughts, my opinions on the air, on the latest news. There's so much to talk about now in the age of Trump. You can have show notes if you need them. They can be found on my website, geraldo.com. Come back often. Feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Geraldo Rivera and on Facebook, Geraldo Rivera. All these links are in the show notes. Again, thanks for tuning us in. Here now the show. Hello, everybody. I'm Geraldo Rivera, the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. It is the second day of March, Thursday. There are a lot of things on my mind. Just back from England, I did a movie over there, a little cameo appearance. I'll tell you about later. I'm sworn to secrecy right now. But from London, after having the requisite fish and chips, I watched the President of the United States giving, I thought, the speech of his presidency. And as I listened to him really speaking in such a wonderfully compassionate and thoughtful manner, I only wished that was the speech he made on Inauguration Day instead of that rabble-rousing populist, we're in it for us and screw you speech that he gave, that very harsh inaugural address, which was really a call to arms for, the harshest conservatives. The speech he made to the joint session of Congress, you know, the first year of a presidency, you don't give a State of the Union, because how could he know after 40 days? But you do, in the first year, make an address to the joint session of Congress, the House and the Senate. And he did that to great acclaim. I mean, he didn't get the same rating. I know how much ratings mean to President Trump. He didn't quite beat President Barack Obama in January of 2009. But when you think about the obvious historic significance of President Obama's ascension to the 44th presidency, I mean, you could see why there was that tremendous, tremendous interest in Barack Obama. Interest also in Donald Trump, who did very, very well in terms of the ratings. I know he cares so much about that. But I thought the most important thing about the speech was its measured tone, its sobriety, its lack of that kind of pointed partisanship that has marked so many of the president's public remarks. But I was very, very proud of my friend, the 45th president of the United States. I thought that he struck all the right notes. And I also think that it's time for the media to stop obsessing about every negative thing. I understand there's plenty to talk about, particularly now you've got the Attorney General of the United States, former Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, apparently caught, if not in a lie, then in what seems at the very best a kind of misrepresentation of his relations, Senator Sessions' relations with the Russian ambassador during the campaign. But, let's put that aside. I think that will take its course. That's more about, well, we'll see. We'll see where these Russian allegations go. We'll see the extent of the Russian connection, if any, to the Trump campaign and to the Trump presidency. But it does seem that Jeff Sessions did not tell the full truth to Senator Al Franken during his confirmation interview about meeting with Russians during the campaign. I mean, Senator Sessions, you will recall, was one of the prime surrogates, one of the early backers of Donald Trump. And he met with this bear-like Russian ambassador at least one time that we know about. And he's the kind of guy, the Russian ambassador, that if you met him and you had a conversation with him, you would not forget it, as Senator Sessions apparently did. Put that aside, I think that give Donald Trump some slack. He made a great speech. Today he was on the SS Gerald Ford, the 4.5-acre large newest nuclear aircraft carrier in our arsenal. And when you compare the Gerald Ford to the Russian aircraft carrier, the one that was belching black smoke as it hobbled its way from the Russian Baltic seaports through the Straits of Gibraltar to the coast of Syria, broke down at least one or two times. It's a piece of junk. The Chinese aircraft carrier, likewise, is kind of amateur hour compared to the state-of-the-art SS Gerald Ford. And we really wish that fine warship and its crew the best. It is the best way to project power. If you can protect them from submarines, aircraft carriers basically give you a military base right in the enemy's backyard. I've just finished my war memoir, and I was reminded of how we parked our aircraft carriers in the Arabian Sea, cutting the commuting distance for our bombers to Tora Bora in Afghanistan down to about 1,000 miles, rather than using our land base, the island of Diego Garcia, which was almost 3,000 miles from Afghanistan. But anyway, aircraft carriers is the way we project power. Proud of the President of the United States for the speech he made. I mean, obviously, the centerpiece of the speech, and I'm sure you're watching. I talked about this on O'Reilly on Wednesday night with Eric Bowling. The centerpiece of the speech and the reason the president really stepped up to the plate big time was when he led the crowd there, the audience, in a prolonged standing ovation for the widow of the fallen commando, Ryan Owens, who fell in that maybe ill-conceived raid in Yemen. He was killed. Ryan was a Navy SEAL. You know, when they ran into fire, whatever their plan was, it was clear that the enemy was waiting for us. But more to the point, the way the president spoke of Ryan's legacy, of Navy SEAL William Ryan Owens' legacy, saying that, I'll quote the president, "Ryan died as he lived, a warrior, a hero, battling against terrorism and securing our nation." That's where the first applause started, but it really went nuts. The crowd went nuts with the widow Karen standing there and looking up to the sky, looking up to heaven, telling her husband up there that she loved him, thanking the president for the way he spoke of Ryan. But the best line that Donald Trump probably ever uttered in his life was, "Ryan's legacy is etched into eternity." I'm telling you, as a you know, I said on O'Reilly, I'm a nothing war correspondent. But for a warrior, there could be no higher praise than saying, as the commander-in-chief did of Ryan Owens on Wednesday, March the 1st, the speech was February 28th, Tuesday, that speech to the joint session of Congress was just remarkable. It was one of them really touching. And Ryan's legacy is etched into eternity. You know, I was saying that, you know, what a way to go for Ryan. Everyone's got to go sometime. And for a warrior to fall in action and have the commander-in-chief say that your legacy is etched into eternity, that's like a Viking being set adrift in a flaming ship. I mean, it's the way I wish I could have ended this whole phase of my existence under God, but wonderful words. Where I had a beef with the president was where he took the life and death of the Navy SEAL and talked about Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemies. And the president quoted Defense Secretary Mattis, General Mattis, as his source that the raid was highly successful. That's just not the way I heard it. The way I heard it, they were targeting certain members of Al-Qaeda, some leaders of Al-Qaeda in Yemen who were not there. They didn't kill or capture any of the high-level people. They killed a bunch of bad guys, at least 14 of the militants. That's true. But they were no names. And the military also acknowledged that at least 25 civilians, including an 8-year-old little girl, the daughter of a Al-Qaeda militant for sure, but she was an eight-year-old girl who was killed in the raid, 25 civilians. And we lost a chopper, a $70 million chopper also. So to say the raid was this wild success, I'm not sure that that is factually accurate. But my beef wasn't that. Wasn't the, you know, his assessment, the president's assessment of the raid. My beef was why he brought it up at all. Why is the success or failure of the military mission part of this tribute to the fallen warrior? It doesn't in any way diminish the heroism of Ryan, that the raid was not the great success they obviously we all hoped it was. But it doesn't diminish Ryan's bravery, you know, that they didn't get the bad guys they were seeking, or maybe the intelligence that they were seeking. This is about the heroism of the warrior, not the wisdom of the military planners. Now, it is natural for political leaders to puff about military successes, although generally speaking, they had very little to do with the military successes. But there is a political component, obviously, to these actions, particularly when you're talking about something daring and bold and unconventional like this raid in Yemen. If you're old enough to remember the hostage crisis, where so many of our diplomats and others working in the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, in Iran, were kidnapped and held hostage. Remember in the old days before Nightline, he had Ted Koppel up there and he said the hostage crisis, Iran hostage crisis, day 20, day 40, day 80, day 150, and so on. There was a real political dimension. Jimmy Carter was the president of the United States. He was commander-in-chief of the armed forces of the United States. Finally, in April 1980, even Jimmy Carter, who was kind of a pacifist, said he had had enough. So he launched an operation called Eagle Claw in April of 1980 to free our hostages in Iran. Can you imagine that raid, like this raid, did not succeed? That raid, like this raid, was marred by bad intelligence and bad equipment. We lost a couple of choppers in the desert, multi-million dollar choppers. But can you imagine if Jimmy Carter's raid in April 1980 had succeeded? Remember, that was the year Jimmy Carter was running against Ronald Reagan. A big reason Jimmy Carter lost the race and the whole nation was suffering a malaise is what the President Carter said at that time. Imagine if that raid had succeeded. Jimmy Carter would have been considered a hero, and Ronald Reagan never would have been president. I mean, he was already old, an elder guy, Ronald Reagan. I think he was the oldest ever elected, and that was in 1980. If he had to wait till 1984, you know, the same question whether you would have ever had a Ronald Reagan presidency if Operation Eagle Claw had succeeded in April 1980. Look at Barack Obama. Barack Obama in April 2011, last day of April, first day of May 2011, launches the raid that took out Osama bin Laden. So that's 2011, May 2011. So Barack Obama for the next year ran on the fact that because of the Barack Obama presidency, Osama bin Laden is dead, General Motors is alive. President Obama did very well politically because of the successful military raid that took out the Al-Qaeda leader, the terrorist mastermind responsible for killing 3,000 Americans on 9/11. But Barack Obama benefited from a military raid that worked with the killing of Osama bin Laden. It worked. The raid worked. We took out the terror mastermind. And Barack Obama, as a result, was reelected in 2012. Jimmy Carter would have been if Operation Eagle Claw had succeeded in April 1980. So there is a political dimension. But what you don't want, politicians characterizing military operations really for political ends. I don't think Donald Trump did that here. I think, though, in trying to justify, remember there was some controversy about Ryan Owen's dad His dad told the military chaplain at the Dover Air Force Base, Ryan Owens' dad told the military chaplain that he did not want to see the president of the United States. He did not want to see Donald Trump. Remember, and I thought it was very a grand and noble gesture when the president went to Dover to greet the incoming remains of Ryan Owens. The dad said he didn't want to see the president. I got hurt by that. I would hope that my surviving family members would never be, and I don't, you know, again, you don't criticize Gold Star families. I don't in any way criticize them. And I understand that Ryan Owens' dad was a very sincere man and sincerely motivated. But I bet if I were to put a wager that Ryan Owens was a lot happier that his wife Karen went to the joint session of Congress, received what could have been the longest standing ovation in the history of joint sessions of Congress, breaking all the records, as Donald Trump quipped. You know, he cares so much about ratings. I think that, I mean, in my family, put it that way, the response of the widow was the one I would like my three children to remember. You know, and I go back to where I started this whole thing today. I just want people to lay off Donald Trump for a while. Give him a chance to make his own mistakes. I mean, you want to know how crazy it is? I love CNN. CNN, as I said on O'Reilly, they do a great job. They really are a wonderful, high-functioning, very professional outfit. And, you know, anybody can be proud to work for them. But it's beyond debate that CNN is obsessed about Donald Trump. And, I mean, the best, look at Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne Conway, the communications director, whatever her title is, I forget. I think it's White House communications director. She put her feet on the sofa, on the damn sofa. She put her feet on the sofa, and people talked about it for 3 days at CNN and elsewhere, these critics of the president. You got to get a life, man. Got to get a life. That's so trivial. So trivial. So many bigger, better things. It shows, though, my point, it shows how obsessively negative the mainstream media is about Donald Trump. It's every real or perceived slight. They're giving the First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump, they're giving her grief for wearing some spangles in her outfit at the joint session of Congress. I mean, come on, give him a break. Give him a break. I mean, let him make his own mistakes. I mean, just don't make stuff up. Obviously, the biggest topic today is this whole flap about the Attorney General I mentioned earlier, Jeff Sessions. I mean, he must, at the very least, recuse himself from any position of authority in the various congressional probes and the Justice Department probes into the connections between the Trump campaign and Russia. At the very least. You know, some are calling for him to resign. I think that's way out of line and way too early. But I think that at the very least, and I appreciated the fact that Secretary Sessions or Attorney General Sessions today said that if he is the target or subject of the probe, he will recuse himself. I think the Democrats better hold their, don't get their panties in a wad about him resigning, because it's we haven't even seen any evidence of wrongdoing yet. There is this apparent, at the very least, misrepresentation about whether he, Jeff Sessions, met with the Russian ambassador, but they have to sort that out. And I'm glad he's going to recuse himself. And none of these guys, you know, I'm a lawyer, where the real rubber meets the road and the real danger to these people is if they tell a tale out of school under oath. That's where they get them. It's never the crime. It's always the cover-up. So all of these Trump administration or Trump campaign people, when interviewed by the feds, they either better say, I don't remember, if they don't remember. And if they do remember, they better say, I invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination. They better not lie. Because if they lie, what goes around comes around, they'll get caught. A couple of other notes I want to clean up today. Obamacare. And now the Republicans, and the president mentioned it in the joint session address, which I thought was unfortunate, but Obamacare repeal and replace Obamacare. And nobody could decide, or no one could agree on the Republican side, what they're going to, the repeal part's easy. What are they going to replace it with? Here's the real problem with Obamacare now and the repeal and replace, and why all these old timers, all these Q-tips, don't they call them? The cotton heads, whatever it is. All these white-haired people. This is why they're so worried about a repeal of Obamacare. Obamacare now forces insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions. That's not insurance. Insurance is when you bet, the insurance company bets you're not going to get sick. You bet you are going to get sick. And you bet that when you do get sick, your premiums will be less than what it would have cost you to pay for your own medical treatment if you didn't have insurance. But when you have a pre-existing condition, I got cancer. God forbid. Say I do. And I go and I can get insurance under Obamacare. I have cancer, but I could still get health insurance. That's not insurance. It's not a bet that you're going to get cancer. You have cancer. So someone's got to pay for the cancer. So if you have a pre-existing condition under Obamacare, you get insurance. That's not insurance. It's an entitlement. It's just like welfare, right? I mean, be honest. Or disability, closer to the truth. Like disability. Or like Social Security, like Medicare, Medicaid. I am sick. I can get medical care, and Obamacare is going to cover it for me. It's a pre-existing condition. They can't disqualify you. How in the world can an insurance company afford to pay those benefits? It's a pre-existing condition. They know you're going to be sick. They know you're going to be riding, this coattail. They know you're going to be getting benefits that you didn't pay for. Somebody's got to pay for them. And the insurance companies are for-profit companies. They're in business to make money. They're paying everybody that has cancer or some of these other dread diseases going forward. They're not paying insurance benefits. They're basically giving them an entitlement. So someone's got to pay who has the lower odds on being sick. It's the young people. The young people have to get Obamacare. Lots of young people do not get sick. Mathematically speaking, you get sicker when you get older. When you're younger, you're healthier. So if you want to save those young people money and say, oh, it's unfair for you to be forced to get Obamacare, then who's going to pay for the old timers, particularly those with pre-existing conditions? Where's the money going to come from? It's either got to come from the federal government, you know, the taxpayer, the other taxpayers. It's got to come from the young, healthy people, or the benefits for the old timers have to be cut. There's no other way around it. Either benefits get cut or somebody pays more if you give young people the break. That's why the Republicans have no idea how to replace Obamacare. What are they going to replace it with? Either they screw the old timers, or they keep screwing the young people. It's got to come from someplace. That's why I predict there's not going to be any rush to replace Obamacare. You heard it here first. It's a bunch of baloney. The other thing, finally today, and I'm going back to the embattled Attorney General of the United States. We've got a lot of problems in this country. Cities like Chicago, where they had the 4,000 shootings last year, almost 800 people shot to death. I mean, that's a real problem. And the Justice Department should investigate. I should say, parenthetically, New York City, unlike Chicago. And remember, we have the same ethnic mix, same racial mix as Chicago. Basically, same economic mix as Chicago. We had the safest month last month that we've ever had. Fewest shootings. We went 9 days when nobody was shot in New York City, which is 2.5 times as big as Chicago. Imagine that. And what's the Attorney General focusing on? So he's not focusing on Chicago. What's he focusing on? He's talking about going after legalized marijuana. He says legalized marijuana is leading to crime. What a bunch of baloney. Legalized marijuana does not lead you to become a heroin addict. If you care about drug abuse, and you should care about drug abuse, as opioid abuse, the epidemic sweeps the country, grabs us by the throat. I mean, look at New Hampshire. Craig and I did a big series up there. New Hampshire leading up to the presidential election. There's more junkies than they're everywhere. I just see the governor of Maryland. He's calling for $50 million state infusion to fight drug abuse, opioid abuse. How do they get hooked on opioids? How do they get hooked on fentanyl and heroin and these other opioids? They get it from the drugs, the drugs that you get prescribed from the doctor. You get it from the, you know, all of these various opioid medicines that everybody's taking. They get hooked on these painkillers. They get cut off by their doctors. So they go to the street to buy heroin. That's the story of the drug epidemic sweeping the nation in 2017. It's not about legalized marijuana, for God's sakes. Legalized marijuana is the best analgesic you could buy. That's a better pain reliever than any of these opioids. The very least, you don't worry about it when you're stoned. I mean, I'm telling you, going after legalized marijuana shows how this culture war is so stubborn in this country. Jeff Sessions and people like Jeff Sessions just cannot get over the fact that half the country has already legalized pot. And they see all these hippies now who are 50 years old, 60 years old, 70 years old, smoking dope. And they can't stand that it's legal. Not that they're a public health menace. Not that they're leading to crimes against people. They just can't stand the fact that pot is legal. That the hippies of Woodstock have won. I urge Jeff Sessions not to divert limited federal resources to going back into reefer madness. Nobody gives a damn about legalized marijuana. Get over it. Everybody I know, well, one or two exceptions, has smoked dope. I bet if you're listening to this, you've smoked dope. It's ridiculous. Did it lead you into heroin abuse? Did it lead you to stick up the store or steal from your grandmother? Of course it didn't. By the way, my friend Cheech is coming. He's got a brand new book. I'll interview him for the podcast next week. He's coming to New York. We've been together a lot of times. As Cheech writes in the book, we've been together in 35 different countries over the years. I've known him over 40 years. And we never, ever, ever, not even one time, even when nobody was listening, smoked dope. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time. I'm Pharrell.